Many of you, most of you, will know the famous prose poem, or maybe confession, by the Lutheran pastor Martin Niemöller. It's about Niemöller's time in Nazi Germany, and it goes like this. First, they came for the communists, and I did not speak up because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. So there's certain ideas or stories that just hang out in the cultural water. And even if we haven't read the story or encountered it directly, we still know it. Even if you have never seen the original Star Wars trilogy, and I'm appalled to think that there may be people who've never seen the original Star Wars trilogy, you broadly know what takes place in the story. If someone puts on their James Earl Jones voice and says, "I am your father," you know what they are talking about. In a similar vein, even if you have never read the history of piracy on the high seas, or read Robert Louis Stevenson, or seen the film based on the ride at Disneyland, Pirates of the Caribbean, you are broadly aware of peg legs and bottles of rum and parrots on the shoulder, and people who inexplicably begin their sentences with the word "R." And even if you have never read a book in the wildly popular Left Behind series, or if you've never hung out in a church where something Left Behind-ish is part of the theology, you still know about the rapture. And the rapture, I want to suggest, profoundly shapes how we hear a passage from the gospel like we just heard from Matthew. Two will be working in a field, one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal, one will be taken and one will be left. So, thanks to Left Behind, what do we know about this story? What do we know about what is taking place and what Jesus is teaching us? Well, we know, I want to suggest, two things. The first is that being taken is something supernatural. And the second is that being taken is a good thing because you are going to God. We know that being taken is supernatural because one minute you are there and the next minute you aren't. Maybe you just vanish, maybe an angel comes and gets you, or maybe you are sucked up into the sky. There was, Julianne Moore was in a movie maybe 15 years ago in which people were sucked up into the sky. The movie was okay, but the effect was amazing. So we know it's supernatural, and we know it's good because where you are sucked up into is heaven. Where the angel comes and gets you is heaven. It's to be with God. If you are working in the field or working in the office with your colleague, and all of a sudden your colleague is not there, that's not good news for you. What has just happened is God has gone through God's books. God has found out who is naughty and who is nice, and you are in the wrong column. You're not, unlike your colleague, things are not good for you with God, or at a minimum, things may be okay with you for God, but God has left you a really unpleasant task that you must complete before the end of the book. To be left behind sucks. Now, here's my thesis for this morning, or at least the first half of my thesis for this morning. If you and I were to learn Aramaic and then get in our time machine and go back and hang out with the crowds that were following Jesus, and if we were to find an opportune moment to get up on top of a rock and announce these two assumptions, being taken is supernatural and being taken is good, Jesus and his friends would be completely gobsmacked. They would have absolutely no idea what we were talking about. Because what Jesus and his friends know, living as they do under empire, living under occupation, is the same thing that everyone who has lived under empire and lived under occupation knows. And that is, there ain't nothing supernatural about being taken, and there ain't nothing good about it. If you are working in a field and one of you is taken, it is because the men in the uniforms have come. If you are grinding meal and one of you is taken, it is because the same men in the same uniforms have just kicked the doors off of its hinges. And where they are taking you is not heaven, at least not directly. You are going into a cage. You are going into a boxcar. You are going into a part of the woods so remote that no one will hear the screams or the gunshots. This is what being taken looks like when you live under occupation. My father is 94 years old, and he lived through Nazism, like Martin Niemöller. He was a generation younger than Niemöller was, about 30 years younger, and he saw people being taken. And these are folks who offered the wrong opinion or made fun of the wrong person or, I don't know what, complained about the wrong thing. Sometimes they were taken in the middle of the night, when sometimes they were, depending on how much bravado Empire had mustered, sometimes they were taken in the middle of the day. And generally speaking, the taken did not return. Although on one occasion, Dad says, someone who was taken did come back. All of this man's teeth had been kicked out, and no one dared to ask what happened. No one spoke up about it. This is how empire works. This is how empire functions. So Rome had its famous peace, and the Nazis, at the height of their power, were able to occupy an incredible amount of land with very few soldiers keeping an eye on things, because everybody knew that to resist, to push back, was to risk being taken and to risk those whom you love being taken. There's two different ways that empire takes people. The one is the obvious one, and that's the one that we've been talking about, and that is where the soldiers come and get you and take you away to another place. This is what happens to Saint Stephen. He is taken by the crowd. It's what happens to John the Baptist. It's what happens to the people in my father's village. It's what happens to Jesus himself. The soldiers come and take him to Pilate and then on to the cross. But there's a second way that empire takes people, and that is, it's what Martin Niemöller is talking about in his prose poem, in his confession. It's when we see the violence of empire and we don't speak out, when we choose to say nothing. In this second kind of taking, we are taken up into the violence of empire, into the inhumanity of empire, and the shackles on our hands are invisible, but they're no less real. To not speak out in the face of empire's brutality, well, it is at the cost of our integrity, of our compassion. It is at the cost of our very humanity. I'm not a communist, so I'm not going to speak out. I'm not a trade unionist, so I am not going to speak out. I am not black in America, so I'm not going to speak out. I am not a homosexual, so I am not going to speak out. I am not transgender, so I'm not going to speak out. I am not a Native Indian, so I am not going to speak out. A sec ago, I said that that Jesus was taken, and that at a literal level is true. He is taken by the soldiers. But there's another sense in which Jesus is never taken at all, in which he is never taken up into empire's violence. Because from the very beginning of his ministry through to the end, Jesus always chooses to speak out. He always chooses to speak out in love and holiness and freedom. Everyone else in some way is taken up into violence. Remember, Peter at the end denies Jesus. I don't know the man, Peter says. But Jesus, even on the cross, refuses to be taken into violence. You could forgive him if on the cross he cursed the people who were around him, cursed the soldiers who were torturing him, but he doesn't do that. What did we hear last week as we read a story of the cross? He's being mocked by these criminals who are also being executed, and Jesus says, "Today you're going to be with me in paradise." Elsewhere in the gospel, he says, "Forgive them." This is of the soldiers who are killing him. "Forgive them. They don't know what they are doing." And maybe this is our choice as Christians. This is the hard decision that we have to make. Are we going to be taken up into the violence of empire? Are we going to choose not to speak out when the time comes? Or are we going to be like Jesus? Are we going to do the hard and difficult and challenging work of being Christ-like? Jesus, who on the cross refuses, even on the cross, refuses to be taken up into violence. And there, that I think that refusal to be taken up is at least part of what we mean when we speak of Jesus' triumph on the cross. It's at least part of what we mean even before the empty tomb comes. When we speak of resurrection, this is our choice. Will we be taken up into the violence of empire, or in imitation of Christ, will we do something hard and holy and choose to be left behind?